Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 60 for November 2nd, 2009. Getting paid. This episode is sponsored by Audible. For your free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. All right, it is time for the iPhone Alley Podcast, number 60. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the App Store, applications, zombies, all that fun stuff. Tonight with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, and really, 60 episodes?
I know, it's just ridiculous. I don't know why people have been putting up with us for this long, but, you know, it's good for us, right? Because we're all getting paid.
You're so funny.
I know. And also here is Mr. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How is your Halloween?
Oh, perfectly fine.
Yeah,
Lots of candy, all that jazz food.
You went
dining.
Out. Yeah. Did you dress up?
No.
You didn't go any.
You mean like and open the door and scare little kids? No, I don't do that kind of thing.
Well, I think Jeff does that. Well, no, Jeff, you got dressed up as you did last year, and I presume many other years. And you went to a party, and right. It looked like a geek fest to me.
Oh, it was totally kick ass. I'm lucky because I get to hang out with so many really creative people. And it really shows on Halloween because everyone comes up with incredibly awesome costumes. And the Halloween party that I go to every year, there's always a theme. Last year it was heroes and villains, and so I went as Captain Hammer.
Right.
And this year was The Future Is Now, so I went as Doctor Who. And it was awesome because I walk in the door and someone sees me and goes, "It's Doctor Who, the David Tennant Doctor Who." So they knew exactly, not only did they know I was Doctor Who, they knew which doctor I was.
That's hot.
Yeah. And
there was a backdrop where everybody was getting their pictures taken.
Yeah. That was really cool.
That's how you can tell it was a really cool party. I went to a party where, I started getting ready for, you know, dressing up at about 7:15. I didn't show up until about 10:30. And it turns out I and my friend and my other friend were about the only people who dressed up. Everybody else had decided that they were dressing as adults.
See, that is so lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you were.
You need to find new friends. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, this is true. But you, no, I love my friends, but none of them listen, so I don't really need to correct myself. But you were Twittering from your, and this is our segue. This is my terrible segue, and if I, to the fact that we want to talk about the new BrightKite, because you still use BrightKite. I haven't used BrightKite in a long time, mostly because I've changed how I use Twitter, I guess, and that's really how I've been using how I'd used BrightKite as a location based extension to my tweets, and I haven't really been tweeting with the with that in mind. So, but you've still been using it, and they recently went to 2.0,
right? And it was really confusing at first,
okay,
but once I sorted it out, it's working really well for me. And the big thing was they changed around where settings were and some things that used to appear as global settings now are post by post settings.
So, okay. So the first thing I think we were talking about, it was the privacy stuff. You know, for me, it's like I have it set so when I check in at home or at maybe a friend's house or something like that, it would be automatically private. And that was a good system because, you know, otherwise you'd, you know, if you didn't explicitly say, as far as I can remember, it wouldn't, you know, say exactly where you were. Right.
Right. And yeah. And so what I'm doing now, which is actually working a lot better for me because the find me thing was so unreliable for me before. when I go to create a new post, you can choose, instead of just having it find you, you can choose from a list of locations.
Okay. So, when I, they also released a new version of the iPhone app as well with the new version of the site. So
right.
when I heard about it and went and took a look at it, and it confused me immediately because the home screen used to be, you know, find me, figure out where I am right now, and then you can say, you know, check in. But now I guess that is kind of done in reverse. So you say, I want to post something first.
Right. And I like it better this way.
And then you can click, you know, where are you, and choose that. And does it still automatically do that?
Well, it'll find your location for you, but you don't have to be limited to it finding your location. You can tell it where you are, which is really nice because before it had to find where you were before you could do anything else.
Okay. So this is a good change. This isn't just to confuse me.
Yeah. I'm very happy with this change because there were many times when I wanted to post pictures before where for whatever reason, Brightkite never was able to acquire my location. So then I could go and tell it just use a generic location.
Post with no location.
Right. Or something just post else. It with a city name and nothing else.
Yeah. Huh.
And so there were a lot of times where I just simply didn't post anything because it became too much of a pain in the ass. With the new version, though, I don't have to wait for it to find where I am. I can just go through my list and say, okay, here's the city I want you to say I'm in.
And you can do a check-in or a post.
Right. And now instead of having to go and check in to get my generic location, then go back and do a post, I can do it all at once.
Okay. Now I'm looking, what about the privacy stuff? Now, when I go to post something, I have, you know, share with friends or share with everyone at the bottom. Is that the extent of the privacy stuff now?
As far as I know.
Okay.
And I haven't dug a whole lot into that part simply because when I'm posting, I'm using Brightkite just for its ability to get a photo out there and let people attach comments to it.
Okay. So instead of like a TwitPic, because TwitPic can do that.
Right. And now, of course, with TwitPic, though, if people don't comment by replying back to that post, it's not a link together.
Okay. Yeah, because it automatically has to be a reply.
Right. But with Brightkite, it can do the location, include the photo, and then people can make comments directly attached to that photo, which I really like because I'll get people commenting on Twitter, on Brightkite, and on Facebook, and I just like being able to go and tell where the people are commenting from.
Okay.
And then it gives them the option to comment wherever they like.
No, I like this addition. It's got a little button underneath with the, you know, share with friends or everyone. You can also click a Twitter and Facebook. I assume that changes depending on what kind of stuff you have actually linked into your Brightkite. So if you didn't have Twitter, I guess it wouldn't have the little Twitter icon.
Not so. That icon, see, that confused me. The Facebook, Twitter icon together like that. I thought when I tapped that, it was going to force a post to Twitter and to Facebook.
And what doesn't?
And in fact, what it actually does is it will post to whatever services you have already configured through the web interface. So in my case, since I have it set only to post to Twitter when I include a photo, when that little button is checked in the app, it sends only to Twitter. Now, if I had like three different services set up, it would send to all the services.
So it would force to send to all those services.
Right. So it's not a Twitter/Facebook button. It's a send to other services button.
Okay. I think I understand that.
So the icons are just confusing.
Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
Icon doesn't change.
You have to have that set up for it to work.
Yeah.
And it won't let you know. It doesn't indicate that. It just says this is what it is.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, you know, I really wish I, you know, maybe it's just my fault for using Twitter like a retard, but but I would love to use, maybe I should, you know, make another Twitter account that's, you know, Michael's crap. which is the opposite of what my account is right now, where I actually talk about stuff that people talk about on Twitter. And post stuff to Brightkite there, but who knows?
I've been kind of rejecting this app posts to Twitter and Facebook stuff, mainly because I feel like those are different groups of people and they want different experiences.
Yeah.
And I have been getting annoyed lately by all of the stuff, the garbage that gets posted to Twitter by other apps saying, basically, look how great I am. I'm a great app. You should check me out because somebody posted their thing through my app to Twitter.
Well, here's the thing, Adam. I think you're following the wrong people. So if, you know, if someone's getting noisy with their apps, then you just...
Well, here's a great example. Do you guys see Mac Heist is doing their thing again? This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I won't let those things post to, you know, my Twitter account, stuff like that, just because I don't want to spread that stuff.
Yeah. So you're not... Okay. Well, I mean, it's marketing, and you can say
Brightkite's
a
little different, because, and on occasion I do use that feature in Brightkite, but I'm kind of selective. So if I'm posting something at Brightkite and it's a picture, I do want to share on my Twitter. You know, it's a little less
insidious. So Jeff, is that right? because it's not term. Like it's not an advertisement. It's more
exactly
of just
I don't think it posts the thing on the bottom of your post saying this was. It might say it's posted, you know, but even
no,
things
it
like
just gives you
does
a,
it say it's posted by Brightkite? No, it doesn't.
No,
just gives
no,
you a link.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. So Jeff, the location stuff isn't really the big deal for you as far as Brightkite goes. It's the commenting. So when this is publicly known that Twitter's turning on geolocation. Is that they're going to be turning that on soon? I know that they have that. Lauren has that in Tweety. Am I saying something that people don't know?
No, that was, that's public information. You're fine.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Like maybe I have to bleep this out. So Lauren's going to be turning that on in Tweety. I think it's on in the build, you know, the 2.1 build that I'm playing with. So that would essentially, as far as I know, just be for third-party apps that have access to what your location is. So coming soon in Tweety 2, I should say, you will be able to post to Twitter with your location kind of built into the tweet. And for anything that can read that information, then you can see that on a map. It's kind of done in the same way that, you know, replies are connected at a level that you can't really see unless you click the in reply to button.
Man, I am so shutting that feature off.
The location thing?
I am not going to use that at all.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The last thing I want is people knowing where to find me.
Yeah, that's true. You'll get a...
Yeah, that always freaks me out too. I don't want anything auto doing that.
I feel
that
like
that was my first concern with Brightkite, that it was going to auto do that. And I was so happy when it was like, it doesn't do that automatically. You know, you're in control.
Yeah, that's a big thing for me.
I assume that when you do that with Tweety 2, and I'm going to look at it now, but I assume that because there is a, you know, my location button when you go to post something right now with Tweety 2, the one that's out there, it just posts a link to Google Maps. So the new button is called Geotag, and it'll...
You have to implicitly add it, though, right? You have to click that button when you're doing the post.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, if it's something where you have to implicitly allow it to happen every time, that's okay, because then... you're not going to forget some time when you don't want people to have that location, and accidentally broadcast it.
That's just gonna that is just gonna ruin Brightkite for me. You know, I guess Merlin was talking about how he uses it as a like a two person kind of Twitter for him and his wife to figure out where they are. And you know, you'll get that update. You know, well, you'll be able to see where everybody is on a map relative to the last time that they posted to Brightkite. That's nice. I just wish there was a better way to bring Twitter into Brightkite as far as reading the stuff. I don't know.
You know, it'd be cool if there was an API that allowed the third-party Twitter app developers to just hook directly into that image. That sounds like an opportunity for Brightkite.
For the third-party Twitter apps to hook into Brightkite?
Yeah, because if they could do that, then you could have, just like we have with TwitPic right now, where a lot of the Twitter applications will give you a preview, and then like Tweety will, on my Mac, just brings up another pop-up window when I select an image, as opposed to going to a web browser, opening up a web page with the picture.
Right.
So that'd be a cool thing.
Okay. So let's move on to some news.
Koala.
Oh, you have something to talk about.
You're going
to
throw that out there. I was going to say, related to the Brightkite conversations quickly before we move on, is I've been playing around recently with another service that's a little bit like Brightkite, called Koala. Have you guys checked this out?
I have not. And I'm only hearing about it now from you.
You're just, so it's in a lot of ways like Brightkite, except that it's they kind of have made more of a game out of it to some degree. And so basically you have a passport, and when you go to different locations, you can collect stamps. And it has also pins that you can earn. So it's all virtual stuff, right? But what I like about it is, like, some of the stamps are specific to, like, well-known places and are actually designed, little designed icons, basically, that go into your account.
Oh.
And you can collect those. They also have something cool called trips. So people set up where they will have built in an area. So if you're going to an area and you're doing some sightseeing, it gives you a bunch of spots that you can hit. And if you hit every spot, you get a stamp at each spot.
That's
and you
cool.
can kind of collect those.
Oh, I like this.
And then also when you're at a spot, if you've checked in, you can like drop items or pick up other items that people have left there.
So it's like a virtual geocache kind of thing.
A little bit. Yeah, it's kind of
it's
got
like
a little
stalking,
bit of
but fun.
A little bit of that element to it. And well, and what's cool is if you're the first person at a place, they have some generic icons for different, you know, like amusement parks or food restaurants, and they have them categorized. So if it's a taco shop, you get a little taco stamp. If you get, you know, if it's a sushi place, there's a little sushi icon. And so you can like be the founder of a place.
So
and then by dropping an item there, you get to be the founder of that place. And then you can kind of see everybody that goes there who's using Koala. So
you're saying that
it's kind of fun.
If I go to like my Starbucks down the street, I get an award for that.
Yep.
Oh. Only once though.
Well,
time.
I don't know if you can pick up something each time or yeah, I've only started playing around with it for the last couple weeks and I haven't been really diligent about it, but it's a neat concept and it kind of you're right, geocaching is a good way to, you know, kind of virtual geocaching is a kind of a way to look at it.
Yeah, I like it. So what if it's does it have to be a well-known
What I'm saying is what's great is if you go to a place that's not well known, you can add it to the database and you become the founder. So it's like if you have some, you know, place in your neighborhood that's really cool that you like that's not on Koala, you can like found it and
be the king.
When people log into Koala, it'll say, you know, your name. This spot was founded by Michael.
Okay.
Johnston.
This Starbucks was founded by me.
Yeah.
I can prove it. It's on the internet.
And if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Of course, yeah. Okay, well, that looks awesome. And it's a free app,
and they
too.
They have really cool icons for, like, well-known places.
Like AT&T Park.
For Rockefeller Center I'm looking at right here that's got, you know, the statue in Rockefeller. They're really nicely designed. I don't know who the designer is, but the icons are really cool looking. One for the Leaning Tower of Pisa, different ballparks, Alcatraz. Let's see what else is on here.
So
there's tons of, so you can like collect these really cool customized icons for like well-known spots.
And you can have friends that, okay, I see that. Yeah. You can say, I want to be friends with, you know, this guy and see his stamps too.
I think they have one for one infinite loop, if I'm not mistaken too. So.
Hope so. So you can only get these things if your iPhone says you're in this place.
Exactly.
Okay. Yep. That's cool. I like that. So it's free and it's called Koala.
Yeah. Kind of fun.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move into some news-ish kind of topics. So the first thing I want to talk about is a website that a friend of the site, some guy, his name escapes me.
Some random dude.
Some random dude who found me at Macworld And I talked to for a while because I was feverish and had the flu, and hopefully I didn't give him the flu. But he called me the other day and said, "Hey, I'm launching a new iPhone website and I want you to take a look at it. And it's really cool. Have you guys checked out appoftheday.com?
Just a little bit. And Michael, just, I'm jumping back at what you said for just a second. At Macworld, when I wouldn't let you near me, it's not because I don't love you. It's because I really didn't want the flu. So
I don't blame
you. I feel kind of bad about that now.
It's fine. I think Callie Lewis wanted to do an interview with me, and I just said, "No, you don't. You do not. Just go away."
You were fracking sick.
I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't even talk at the party. I had to. I made Arnold talk, and he, you know, that's not his thing.
Which is kind of funny. So see, there was some good stuff out of you being really sick.
Yeah. Okay. So app of the day, it's appoftheday.com. And every day there's a new app that's just kind of collectively picked by the app of the day community. And it's, you know, it's free to sign up. You go sign up and you nominate an app to be the app of the day. And you can nominate one app a day. And I think you can only nominate an app once, because that would make sense. So as soon as an app gets, you know, so many nominations, then, you know, if it's the top nominated app at the end of that particular day, then the next day that becomes the app of the day. So it's a really cool, it's, you know, user generated, you know, way to discover new apps. And so that actually, you know, I was able to discover a new game. It actually recently came out, called Cannibalt. And have you guys looked at Cannibalt?
No.
Okay. So it's this really epic little itty bitty game. It's very simple. It's
Oh, I have looked at this.
It's grayscale, pixelated kind of animation stuff. But basically, you're a little dude and you're running across the tops of buildings, and you're jumping from building to building. And the way you do that is you tap and he jumps, and you have to jump at the precise right time, you know, to either jump over the building or avoid things that you'll trip over and will slow you down, which, you know, kind of makes you not be able to leap across a building. And there are bombs that fall down, and the soundtrack is just pure epic awesome. And it just, every single time I fall, I would just, you know, yell, "No!" And, you know, hold up my phone. It's very cool. It's $3, and very well worth it. Cannibalt.com. You can get a free taste of Cannibalt. They have a free flash version on their site, so you can check it out. And I got it immediately, thanks to appoftheday.com. So everybody should check it out and sign up and tell your friends, because it's a really neat way to, you know, to discover new apps.
So why do you have very to cool. sign up? Oh, so you can nominate applications.
Yes, you can nominate apps. You don't have to sign up to check out the apps of the day.
That makes sense. Yeah. Apparently, I'm just a little slow tonight.
Oh, it's okay. So let's move into stuff that I feel like we need to talk about, which is the Droid by Motorola and Verizon. I think we've all heard about it. It's the Android, the second Android phone from Motorola, and it's getting a lot of hype because it's got, what, a 5-megapixel camera, dual LED flash for the camera, slightly bigger screen. Is it multi-touch? I can't remember.
I don't remember. It's definitely touch.
They're running the version 2.0 of the Android software on it. And everybody who looks at it says it's super awesome and might actually compete for reals with the iPhone, which is awesome because competition is always good.
It is.
And especially, have you guys, you know, sidebar, have you guys noticed any weirdness with 3.0 still? Because I'm getting a lot of, the most annoying thing for me is podcasts and like audiobooks. Whenever I sync, it may or may not screw up where I paused and left off. Have you guys noticed that at all?
No, but I don't use my iPhone for music.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's been doing that, and it's been a little bit slow for random things. And What do you use, a Zune for music?
Or a podcast. I use my fifth gen iPod.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because it just works and it holds 30 gigs of stuff and I don't have to worry about weeding out things. Yeah. See, this is my mistake. When I bought my 3GS, I should have got the 32 gig, but I got the 16.
That
so
is a mistake.
Bad on me.
Yeah, okay.
But regardless, anyway, with all the apps that I have, it wouldn't have helped.
Right, yeah.
I still would only have like 8 gigs available for music.
Right. I have all my pages filled up and that's a problem. Yeah, so there's not much for us to say about the Droid because I'm not sure people want to hear a bunch about it. At least in this demographic. November 6th is when it comes out, and we'll hear a whole bunch. And I think Engadget and CNET have some like preliminary reviews on that. And but on top of that, to add to that, Verizon has said that even though they're coming out with this Droid and saying, you know, the Droid is so much better than the iPhone because it supports open development and you can customize it and all this cool stuff, you know, we're still open to getting the iPhone on Verizon. And it's up to Apple.
You know, even though they bag on it in their commercials.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you go to the, what is it, droiddoes.com?
Yeah, I just went there.
Yeah, droiddoes.com will forward you to Verizon's page, and it will show you how, you know, I don't customize, I don't run widgets, I don't have interchangeable batteries, everything I don't, Droid does, and it's, you know, crazy.
Yeah, it's a total slam on the iPhone, which is okay because, you know, they're marketing and hyping the Droid.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just find that very funny that they are implying that the iPhone is a substantially inferior product and at the same time telling Apple, we'd love to have it.
Yeah.
Of course, awesome. Isn't Verizon also the same carrier that has billboards that say the BlackBerry sucks on every other network, so you need to get a BlackBerry through them?
I haven't seen those, but that sounds Verizon.
Those are around Denver. And the first time I saw one, I thought, are you kidding me? RIM was okay with an advertisement like that?
Disparaging the BlackBerry except the one on Verizon.
Yeah. I mean, if I was in charge of RIM, okay, first, they'd be making better quality BlackBerries than they are now. But I certainly wouldn't allow a cell carrier to run advertisements that say, yeah, it's a BlackBerry, but it sucks everywhere else. Because then the implication is, well, the BlackBerry sucks.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So just a couple quick comments on this. You know, I've been kind of watching this. I did a quick scan of their website. You know, under the tech specs, it does not say that it's multi-touch. It just says touch screen.
Okay.
But again, I haven't seen any of the things, but I can't see anywhere on their website where it seems to, and I think you would think they would like promote, hey, it's multi-touch.
And when
that
I looked at the,
to promote.
When I looked at CNET's video of it, it looked like they were only doing like the double tap in single tap, no pinching.
So I'm sure if we're wrong, we'll hear about it and we'll be able to correct it on the next show.
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing is, great, it's open app development, but they still need the app library. And I think that's where the iPhone is going to be hard to catch up to because they have such a large head start.
Yeah.
Not saying it's impossible, but that's going to be the key, I think, to the Droid and the other Android phones taking off. I think they have the best chance at this point. If I was a developer and didn't want to develop for the iPhone for whatever reasons, and there's lots of reasons, which we've talked about on the show, you know, a lot of the restrictions, then I would look at Android as the platform to go to as the next one. I don't think I'd be doing, you know, web apps for pre, you know, web OS apps for pre or anything like that, or Nokia.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, but I think until they have the app library built up, other than the network thing, saying, well, it's Verizon, and I know there's a lot of people on Verizon, great, that's a reason to go. What I would love to see happen is I'd love to see this thing take off huge on Verizon, to be honest, because that would immediately, in my mind, probably kill their whole we have the best network in the world thing. Because with AT&T, for most people, I don't think it's the network coverage, which seems to be the way Verizon is spinning this thing, is like, you know, we have 3G in more areas. I think it is to a certain degree for people that are in certain areas of the AT&T network. But I mean, most places I've gone, if it's a major metropolitan area or even a medium-sized metropolitan area, I tend to have 3G coverage on AT&T. Where it's sucking in a lot of cases is the performance. And we know that especially in heavily congested areas, New York, San Francisco, where there's a lot of iPhone users, it's the bandwidth that's the problem. And that's a symptom of too many people using data network in a condensed area. So I don't think Verizon is immune from that. They just don't have a phone yet that has caused that problem to their network. So if this is going to be the phone that's going to do it, that would be great.
Yeah.
Because that would just kill that argument right away. I think if they got the iPhone, they're going to suffer the same problems. You're going to have a bazillion people using tons of data. And I don't think there's any cell carrier out there right now that has the network that could sustain it. I'd love to see Verizon prove me wrong, but that's just my gut instinct and, personal theory.
I have a feeling you're totally on with that.
Well, FCC, the FCC's chairman of the FCC has actually recently talked about the fact that the intense demand that the iPhone puts on, the cell network, is going to require them to look at, the spectrum again in a way to broaden the spectrum, to open it up, to make it, support such a great demand, that something like the iPhone or even, a Droid phone or an Android phone, would require, because, we've got all these, data applications, especially on the iPhone, not only just Safari, but, all these, streaming music and, eventually we'll want streaming movies and TV and all the same stuff that we have on our PCs, over the cell network. And it's good to see that the FCC is very aware of this. And, I haven't really been keeping up on the net neutrality stuff recently, but I feel like they're, obviously aware of that. The FCC's chairman also mentioned that he is an iPhone user. so that, he's, aware of that kind of issue. So,
I wish the carriers were, because I think they're too distracted by the let's get the iPhone war.
Yeah.
I think Verizon probably, if their marketing people are to be believed, then they have this great network. But I think they're really talking about coverage. Most of the stuff I seem to see focuses on their 3G coverage area. And I'd love to know if somebody's a network engineer out there, does 4G solve this problem or does it just compound it? The LTE networks, when everybody moves to that, is that still an infrastructure problem? Is it still a backbone problem where there's only so much pipe and they're busy, trying to compete with the iPhone, building all these smarter smartphones that do a lot of data, and the load's just going to get exponentially heavier every year these new phones and these new devices come out, especially as they get better, like the Droid. And people go, oh, here's a great alternative to the iPhone. I want to stay on Verizon. I'm going to get this thing. And they suddenly have the experience that all iPhone owners had, 3 years ago, where like, wow, I can do data everything on this. I don't have to take my laptop anymore. And you're using it for email, for web surfing, for all the apps, for you name it. I don't think the cell companies, any of them, are really ready. AT&T is higher up on the learning curve at this point.
I think it's just going to end up being like this for, another 5 years. I think we're just going to see this, game of catch up as far as, the iPhone's out. Now we have to restructure everything because it's actually making people want to use the internet on their wireless devices. And, just in the same way that we saw with, with the internet kind of popping up with, 56K modems and whatever, and it was very slow. And now, we have so much bandwidth, we're just inventing new ways to fill it up.
Right.
So I think it's going to take a while, but phones like the phone and the Android, I don't know how to talk right now, but phones like the iPhone and the Droid and even the Pre that use a lot of data and have access to that kind of stuff, and users actually want to get at that stuff on their cell phones, that's going to push the carriers to really scramble to try and figure out how to solve this problem. So you know, it's good as long as it doesn't collapse before we get to the point where it's sustainable.
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it comes back to the same problem AT&T had when the iPhone rolled out. Verizon's going to get hit with it if the Droid takes off. And that's that they don't build networks to accommodate the maximum amount of traffic that their users can generate. They build the networks to accommodate what should be considered an average level of usage. Mm-hmm. And I doubt Verizon is any farther along than AT&T in accommodating the higher level of traffic that you get when you create a product that people can actually use.
Well, Adam, you were mentioning, you know, that you think is it more of a pipe issue? Is it more of a, you know,
I have no idea. I'd love a cell engineer to chime in, and I'd love to hear a Verizon engineer say, "Nope, you're wrong. We've totally prepared for this, and our network's going to be awesome when we get the Droid and when we get the iPhone, if we do." You know, which I think is another thing that we're going to talk about probably. But
because I always assumed it was more of an actual spectrum issue, but it'd be interesting to hear about that. You know,
I think it's an infrastructure issue. I think it's more related to the backbone, the stuff they've got running.
Okay,
but I could be totally wrong. I don't know. You're saying there's limited spectrum available in a given region, and they've saturated it. So like San Francisco in New York. But I mean, they opened up the lower bandwidth spectrum, right, in those areas. That's what they're doing. They're using that new 850 spectrum to kind of open things up in those areas. So maybe you're right. I mean, maybe it is a total, we've saturated all the available spectrum at a certain frequency in a given area, and we can't. And then, I mean, if that's the reality, they are screwed. I mean, how do you solve that problem? Like you're saying, unless the FCC is going to open up more spectrum, and where do they get that spectrum from?
Right. And I think that, you know, if it does definitely seem like it's more of a, you know, a wireless issue more so than it is just a backbone issue, because, you know, we have the only big difference between, you know, getting the internet, you know, wired at our homes and, you know, on our cell phones, the major difference is that it's over a cell network instead of, you know, being hardwired to the backbone.
I don't know. Maybe they need to partner with some wired broadband carriers and make a, we talked about, you know, maybe a mesh network of micro cells. Maybe they work out some sort of macro cell, or is that just what, you know, WiMAX and all that stuff's supposed to be?
I'm under the assumption that that's part of what WiMAX is supposed to accomplish. But of course, if you don't have a system set up where all those little WiMAX stations are open to anyone that comes by, well, it doesn't do a lot to fix those problems.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Like you said, Michael, I think, you know, 5 years, 10 years, we'll know the answers. But I do think in the short term, the next few years, you know, 3 to 5 years, it's only going to get worse. Because you look at the devices that are out there that we're talking about. It's just more data. And I just don't think they're ready.
Right. But I mean, it is good though. Yes, it's going to suck for a while, but yeah. Having all these, you know, obviously it started with the iPhone, but the iPhone is creating all these other, you know, pushing other manufacturers to, you know, make more data intensive phones. And that, you know, in turn eventually makes the carriers want to implement more infrastructure and get that up to a level that, you know, will support, you know, crazy amounts of data. And, you know, eventually we'll get there. It's causing a big shift and a big change in the way, you know, everything's done. And like you were talking about, as far as, you know, how many users they're willing to support at a given time, as far as, you know, the average as opposed to, you know, the maximum amount of bandwidth they can offer.
Let me summarize it this way.
Okay.
These are phone companies. When in the history of the world has a phone company ever been quick to react?
Exactly. There you go. Yep. So, and
I'm shaking my head in sadness, just so you know.
I know. So we've heard that there's a rumor based on what Ralph De La Vega did or didn't say that the iPhone exclusivity may end at AT&T.
Is that a shocker to anybody?
No. But the quote is, we have a legacy of having a great portfolio that will continue after the iPhone is no longer exclusive to us. We think that we will continue after the iPhone to drive results. So I think that's really a very vague thing. Him just saying, well, when the iPhone isn't here, we'll still do well because
we have a plan.
Because we have a plan.
You know, I have a feeling his comments were driven by the rumors that Apple might be talking to Verizon.
I think so too.
Because it's no secret that the iPhone will eventually be available on multiple carriers in the United States. AT&T has made references to that in the past, and to expect that exclusive arrangement to last for the life of the iPhone product line is kind of ridiculous. So when you have a head honcho at AT&T saying, well, you know, when the iPhone isn't exclusive with us, and then on with whatever else he's going to say, okay, well, that's a given. So right. I think this is just a preemptive move to let people know, look, yeah, we all know the iPhone isn't going to be here as an exclusive agreement forever, but it's okay because we're ready for that whenever it happens.
That's how I understood those comments.
So I don't even see that as news.
Do you think that having the Droid coming out on Verizon's network, do you think that's going to delay any sort of partnership between Apple and Verizon that may have been going on previously?
I think what's delaying an arrangement between Apple and Verizon is 4G rollout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my Jedi instincts are telling me Apple is going to stay exclusive with AT&T until 4G happens, and then they can have the same phone across the board, and it'll be a much easier transition to other carriers.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless they have some magic bullet. The one thing I was going to ask you guys, though, and it kind of contradicts what you just mentioned, Jeff, which I've tended to agree with up until, you know, recently, because I'm looking at, you know, how many other countries Apple's moved into multi-carrier deals with. And it's starting to feel to me like Apple would want to move multi-carrier in the States sooner than later. And everything I'm hearing says, you know, Verizon, they're going to be the first one, it sounds like, with a 4G network, but it sounds like mid-2010, they've rolled out in a couple cities, and they probably don't have full rollout till 2011. And I'm not even sure that is full rollout by, you know, 2011.
So if there's a Verizon iPhone and you're in a city that doesn't have this 4G service, do you have no service?
See, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Is there some sort of magic phone, or, you know, is Apple going to be forced to do a phone for Verizon's network? And the more I think about it from a pure business standpoint, for Apple at this point, it doesn't seem like it would be that bad a deal. Now, I don't know what the engineering and production costs and things like that are, but, you know, there are multiple band chips out there that can go cross, you know.
Right, world phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do they just build a new phone in advance of the 4G network and say, here's our Verizon phone, and you know, they have certain, you know, the 4G stuff turned off or certain things turned off to, you know, I don't know what they can do with it, but it just feels to me like, are they going to want to wait that long? Because I'm with you. It doesn't make sense to do two phones if it's cost prohibitive or if there's not an uptick in it. But the more and more people that I know who I'm asking, who don't have iPhones that I'm talking to, it's, well, when they have it on Verizon, I'll buy it. I hear that more and more and more. So it just feels to me like Apple's hit everybody that's gonna switch, that where the hardware is enough to push them over the edge. And they've kind of reached that saturation. And so my question is, how long does Apple want to wait to pick up the rest of those people, especially when you have things like the Droid, you know, because if these start to gain traction on Verizon's network, something like the Droid, and you're locking people into 2-year contracts, then does it make sense for Apple to come out with a phone in 2011 when everybody's waiting for another year if they even want to switch to the iPhone at that point? Right. So I don't know. I'm conflicted now. I used to be more certain, but I'm a little more conflicted now on the timing, just with everything that's been going on in the media.
Yeah, it's weird that you're making me feel more conflicted too, just by saying all this.
All right, so I'll give you some more internal conflict then.
Okay, good.
So if Apple wants to end its exclusive agreement with AT&T sooner as opposed to later, why go to the trouble and expense of making a version of the iPhone that's exclusive to Verizon when they can just strike a deal with T-Mobile that has a lot of coverage in the United States and has already set up the entire infrastructure that they need over in Europe? They can just duplicate it here and go.
Why not both?
I think it's the rollout of 3G for T-Mobile is the thing that's probably keeping Apple from doing that.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, my counter argument, the argument to that is I'm just wondering at this point, is there enough customer base at Verizon? I mean, Verizon's huge in terms of customer potential, whereas I don't think T-Mobile has that. I think they might throw T-Mobile in there just because it's easy. Why not do a deal with T-Mobile also and have a three carrier system?
They're planning on having that eventually in the UK. And do they have that right now in Canada? Three carriers now?
I think they do or they will soon.
I think it's soon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be two carriers in the UK this month. And then by next year, they're going to have three in the UK. And then I guess it's the same thing in Canada.
Yeah. And do they have two? I think they have two in Germany now. I mean, they're moving multi-carrier. Yeah.
I mean, it helps. I mean, we're talking about these, data issues. And I think if anything, spreading that out helps a little bit, with between all the carriers, hopefully people,
so if anybody's so if anybody's a business major, all we need to solve this is I need somebody who can crunch the numbers to say, okay, here's the number of customers that are on Verizon that haven't switched. Here's the number that are potentially interested in a iPhone. And what does that, what does that amount to in dollars, potential dollars for Apple? And that would answer the question of, well, and then the flip side of it is how much more would it cost them to build a new phone for the Verizon network? Take those two numbers and you can probably easily figure out if it's worthwhile or not for Apple to do a new phone or not. So that's the unanswered question in my mind is really how much does it cost them to build another version of the iPhone?
Now, keep in mind, there's also the time lag that goes along with getting that new phone FCC approved, because it would be considered a different product. So is that time lag short enough that it makes sense to create a separate phone for Verizon now? Or is it going to take long enough that they might as well just wait the extra few months until 4G really is available?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I would guess if this is their plan to go early, and I think it was pretty well thought that 2010 was kind of the end of the AT&T contract. I think there had been some rumors that maybe they had extended it, but let's just assume they hadn't, and it's always been 2010. There's also the potential Apple's already been working on something.
That's true.
And it's just they're just waiting for the date to roll around, and then they submit it to. I think they've gotten quick approvals from the FCC in the past.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think maybe we should hold off on further conversation of this until 2010.
All I'm saying is for some reason right now, it feels like it's going to be sooner than later to me, my gut instinct.
Okay. So let's move on. Google has developed a new application to go with their maps. It's called Google Maps Navigation? They just rolled that out for Android phones, and it's a free turn-by-turn direction navigation application built on Google Maps, and it looks pretty great. I realized something that was going on. The Goog 411 stuff? Mm-hmm. That free free directory assistance?
Mm-hmm.
They've had that because they've wanted to train voice navigation. Well, their voice, what's the word I'm looking for?
Recognition.
Voice recognition. Thank you. They've been trying to figure out how to really hone in on some good voice recognition. And they've taken that technology and put it into this maps navigation application. So it all works wirelessly, I assume, because it's based on Google Maps. So you pull it up on your Android phone. And you can say, and I believe I saw this demo done on a Droid. I can't remember, but because the Droid actually has a car kit that, you can get for it. So you put this in the car kit and then it lets you say, take me to the nearest Starbucks, and it will route you to the nearest Starbucks without a problem. And that's pretty awesome. And they've actually said, one of the a Google spokesperson said to Apple Insider that they will continue to work with Apple, bringing innovation, including latitude navigation, to users, but you'll have to speak to Apple about availability. So it seems like it's, an issue of, you know, Google's totally gung-ho about, you know, giving this kind of stuff to Apple, but it's up to them whether or not they're going to add that. And it'd be interesting to see if, you know, how Apple would do that. And I'm not sure if Google Maps is a completely separate application than to, you know, the navigation application on an Android phone. So, you know, whether or not they would integrate that in the current Maps app or offer it as a free download, you know, from Google, it'd be interesting to see. I don't think Apple would want to put it in their current Maps application because that would kind of irritate developers who do turn-by-turn navigation apps right now.
Well, I don't know if it would irritate them that much.
Really?
Because keep in mind, Google's turn-by-turn navigation system requires your data connection to be working. So this is something that you can use in areas only where you have a good cell signal. Whereas the other turn-by-turn products, they're actually loading all the data onto your iPhone so that they work even when you can't get a cell signal.
This is true. I'm not sure if, you know, on a user end, if that's enough to...
The first time someone gets lost in the mountains, that's when they'll decide, okay, I need to go buy TomTom or what's the other one, Navigon or one of those.
Right, yeah.
But like for around town stuff, the Google thing I think would be a really cool addition.
Right, yeah. It'd be interesting to see. It looks cool. Go in the show notes there. You'll see a video of the app in, you know, actually happening and working. So this one's cool.
I had a quick question on the AT&T side or on the iPhone side, and I'm just curious if you guys remember. Wasn't the, and maybe it's gone now that we have apps, but wasn't the turn-by-turn directions thing a restriction on the AT&T contract side from Apple?
I don't remember. Jeff, do you know?
I don't know, actually.
That it sounds
Shoot, I was
like
hoping you guys
be.
Would remember.
I don't remember that.
In the back of my mind, it seemed like that was like AT&T saying, Apple, you can't do turn-by-turn because AT&T had their own turn-by-turn thing, right?
It could be, but if there's other turn-by-turn applications now, that might have been a something where AT&T said, we get first crack at it. And after we've been first to the iPhone with our product, then others can roll out. And, which is pretty much how it worked out, as I recall. Because AT&T's turn-by-turn app came out, and then it was after that TomTom and Navigon came out.
I'm not sure it had a lot to do with AT&T at all. I think it was an Apple decision.
Well, cool. Then I,
Maybe
then I hope
it was a
they...
limitation with Google.
Yeah, that could be too.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Because they weren't allowing a lot of Maps things going on, right?
Right. Well, because you can't use Google Maps tiles for turn-by-turn. Of course, Google can, though.
and that was a licensing thing.
Right.
Basically, you could. You just had to get a license from Google, Apple license from Google. So they were just saying you can't extend Apple's license to your third-party app, which always made sense to me. Yeah.
Okay, so moving on, Apple will begin using, this is a rumor, I guess, from IFO Apple Store, but supposedly Apple Retail will begin using iPod Touch. Did they say iPod Touches or iPods Touch? Have we decided iPod Touches?
Touch Eye.
Sure. They're going to be using those things. They're going to be using
iPod
them.
iPod Touchies.
Yes, yeah. for checkout instead of the current Windows-based devices that they have been using for a while. And this is something that I've talked about with numerous Apple employees, you know, that they've just been, everybody I've talked to has just been saying, I really would rather use an iPod Touch, an iPhone OS based device to do point of sale. And that's the rumor that they're going to be using the iPod Touch with an add-on that scans barcodes. Not only will it scan just, you know, one barcode, but if you have purchased an iPhone in an Apple store, you'll notice that they have to scan three or four barcodes, you know, one at a time to, you know, actually let you purchase the device. And this new one will actually let you let them scan all of those barcodes at once and do it really, really easily. And they have their own point of sale application that they're going to be developing. It's going to be just happy goodness for everybody. And they're also getting rid of the unified shirts, or the they're getting rid of the color coded shirts. So they're going to go to unified shirt colors.
Yeah. So two comments. So finally, great. Finally, on the on getting rid of the PC checkout, you know, scanner things. I figured that was coming for a long time. I don't know what took them so long. I guess
probably the software.
My assumption is what took them so long is they couldn't find enough adapter cables to use message pads with the scanners, so they had to wait till they could do something with an iPod Touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so they got the APIs now, so they're going to switch over. So that seemed like a logical transition. I don't think anybody at Apple was happy that they were using Windows mobile devices for that function.
Right, yeah.
On the unified shirt thing, though, it was funny because the stuff I read said that it was because of customer feedback, that customers were confused by the shirts.
Right.
And maybe it's just because I'm an uber geeky guy and I always understood it, but I always found it kind of convenient because I always knew, check in for my Genius Bar appointment, I go to the orange shirt guy.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I always got just, that.
I need to buy something, where's the light blue shirt guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I
so
feel
I
like
it. So I'm gonna actually miss that unless they're going to let everybody help me, because I just remember the old days where you'd walk in and it'd be like you'd grab somebody who was obviously an employee and they're like, oh, you need to go talk to that person. Then you kind of walk over to that person and be like, oh, no, you want to talk to so-and-so.
I think they're probably going to be unifying that and allowing everybody to kind of take care of you. They're also getting rid of the concierge position, is what I heard from our good friend Mac OS Ken.
That's so too bad.
That is too bad. They're moving those guys to a different position. I don't think they're just dropping employees.
Well, again, unless everybody can help check me in, because they always wanted you to check in with the concierge even when you had an appointment. So, you know, it always made it really easy when I had a Genius Bar appointment. Just walk back to the orange shirt person. Hey, I'm here for my appointment. Great. They'll be ready for you in a couple minutes.
Well, you know, the concierge people are usually like really cute girls. So maybe you can just like look for the really cute girls and say, hey, you wanna check me in for my Genius appointment?
Oh my God. You're using that as a pickup line, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, what did you think I meant?
Yeah, I was just asking for clarification. That's what I assumed you meant.
Now it is. But I think I was channeling you, Jeff.
Does anybody think it's maybe just a rebellion because now they don't want to be like the Microsoft Store people?
You know, that's very true. Yeah, I don't think we talked about that. I saw the video of
could they rip off Apple?
I was looking at it, and
yes,
the only
could.
Way I could tell
they could put
that
an Apple logo on the top of the doors instead of a Windows logo.
The only way you can tell that it's not an Apple store is that they're running Vista or I guess Windows 7 now on their on the computers, and their ugly computers instead of the Macs. I think their whole goal with those stores is they're going to trick people into thinking they're going into Apple stores.
It's like total confusion.
it's insane how much they look alike. And we're not even being Apple bigots here. Go look at the video. Go check out, you know, what is it? The Microsoft Store, they call it? Microsoft
Store. Store was the name of the guy that made the YouTube videos.
Okay.
And I'm sure that's someone that Microsoft has employed at some level to create that stuff.
You know,
even though it's supposed to look like it's you know, like a fan video.
You know, my favorite part about that video that I saw with the, you know, hey, it's, you know, grand opening, everybody streaming in. Yeah, there was, you know, something of a line, a pretty decent line outside the Microsoft store. But, mm-hmm. you know, they had all the employees lined up as they would at an unveiling of an Apple store, ready to high-five you. But most of the people were just kind of going in with kind of, you know, just kind of grinning and just thinking this is just a look of this is kind of silly. And some people would maybe like, okay, I'll give you a high five. But most of the people were just like, I'm not giving you a high five.
Hey, man, I'm here for the free swag.
Yeah.
Get out of my way.
I'm here for the free Windows 7.
Well, you know, and then the other major difference is that just every couple of days or so, the doors turn blue and lock randomly.
But it's okay.
It would be so awesome if they did.
The back door is always open so anyone can come in.
There you go.
Yeah. You got to run antivirus on the store.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's.
No, that's not fair.
Yeah. No, I honestly, I've been thinking about, you know, that I don't hate Microsoft. I'm glad that they're there because they push innovation at Apple.
Right. Well, I mean, and the other thing that I'm hearing is great is supposedly Windows 7 is very good. And for those of us who do need to run the occasional Windows app and we're using Parallels or Bootcamp or whatever to do that, you know, I'm looking forward to that. So what's great about, you know, being on the Mac side is we get the best of both worlds and we don't really have to worry about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on. We've got a lot of stuff on the list and we're probably going to just knock off.
Blast
some of
through it. Yeah.
Just blast through it. So the, let's just go to this last one. NG Moco has, yesterday released two of their, really highly anticipated games, Eliminate, which is a first person shooter, online multiplayer game, and Touch Pets, which I have no interest in because I don't care. But Eliminate.
Because you have a real cat.
Yeah, because I have a real cat. And I, yeah. And so does Jeff. Do you have a cat?
Right.
You have a cat.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We have a cat.
And this is why we don't care. But for people who do care, it's definitely worth checking out because NG Moco is awesome. They're honestly.
They make good stuff, yeah.
Five star, triple A. Whatever you want to call it, great studio for putting out iPhone apps. They're fantastic. And I applaud them for these new applications. They've launched them in Canada first because they are network-based games and they don't want to do a global launch yet until they figure out what the load is going to be like. So they launched in Canada first. I made a Canadian account and grabbed Eliminate. It is free. Honestly, the highest production value I've seen in an iPhone game, period. It's fantastic. And the way they make their money is with in-app purchases. So as you play, you get or you lose energy depending on how well you do. And if all of your energy has been drained, you stop gaining points for that particular day. You have to wait until your energy is recharged automatically at the end of the day. But the way they, you know, make money is if you want to buy energy instead of waiting for it to recharge overnight, you can just buy energy. And I think it costs, you know, a couple bucks to buy a crate of energy and then you can, you know, re-energize if you want. But if you don't want to buy energy, you just want to wait, you can still play in the games. You just don't earn credits, and credits allow you to level up, as in buy, you know, armor or different kind of suits and different kinds of weapons. And you can't buy those weapons with actual real money. You have to earn credits by playing.
So the evil genius.
Isn't it a first-person shooter grocery store game?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I've been playing it for a while. The only thing, and this is, you know.
How many crates of energy have you purchased?
I haven't purchased any energy.
You've resisted the temptation. We'll see how long it lasts.
I know. Oh, boy. I started off playing in the, because you can play offline and just play against the computer if you want. And, yeah, that works fine. So I did a little bit of training and, you know, I pwned all the robots. So I started doing some online play. And I think they give you a little bit of energy when you first sign up. So I actually energized once. So I have, like, you know, a little bit left. But for the most part, it's really fun. You have to, it's just because there are no physical controls. It's, you know, dual joystick kind of, you know, setup. And it works pretty well. The only trouble I've had is with my thumbs getting, you know, either a little hot because, you know, against the phone screen that's also getting hot and getting a little, you know, stressed because of playing the game. And then it's a little bit oily because, you know, of fingers on the screen, and eventually it gets a little difficult to play effectively, and so it makes me want to put it down. But for the first maybe 15, 20 minutes of play, it's really enjoyable once you get used to it. And I feel like it's something you're going to have to get used to. I'm definitely more comfortable with playing a first-person shooter on my computer with a keyboard and mouse. But for the price of free, totally check it out. I mean, it's genius. It looks so great. And for anybody who's played Portal, you have the same kind of overseer, woman voice, just kind of letting you know about different things in this training arena that you're participating in. It's very comical. There's a where to find button. And if you've looked at the trailer, you'll know what I mean by the where to find, because it's, you know, WTF, where to find. Hit the WTF button. So there's a WTF button, and it's very comical and light, and it's fun. So when it does come out, check it out. Or if you're in Canada, you can get it now. Just, you know, search for Eliminate. And I've been enjoying it. So that's my mini review.
You know what else I think is actually cool about this is that this is available in Canada first. So that's kind of cool that people in Canada are getting applications for a change before people in the United States are.
They have been getting a pretty raw deal in the past with regards to the iPhone, huh?
Yeah. So this is kind of a nice little perk for them.
Yeah. It's such a good looking game. I've looked at the trailer a couple times. You can get to it by going to the options and hit the trailer, and it shows you the intro video. And it's so well done. It's very cool. And these are the guys who got the first big check from Kleiner Perkins, right? NG Moco. Pretty sure they got a lot of funding.
Huh. I forgot about that. iPhone. Yeah. Maybe they are.
So, you know, high five to them. That's awesome. It looks great. Check it out. And with that, we're going to move on to...
We got to do a quick mention of iTunes 9.0.2.
Okay,
only
yes.
Only because, thank God, they put the dark grid view back on.
Yes. Yes, they did.
Okay, that's it.
It looks so much better. Update. And if you go... It's not by default, but if you go into iTunes preferences after you update to 9.0.2, you go to
the general tab,
and they've added a new drop down. It says grid view, dark and light. Change it to dark, and it will make you happy again.
Yeah. So if you hate the white, which I have hated the white,
there were some people who made mods and like binary hacks and stuff to change the color. And I actually applied that. You know, so I'm glad to see that come back. It's one of those things where, you know, back when Leopard was first released, and you know the transparent menu bar irritated everybody, they added the option to change that. So it's nice to see that Apple's actually paying attention to that kind of stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, it is. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I know. We could go into something else, but we got to wrap up.
No. That's good. I just want to throw that in because I missed it at first, and I figure some people might have also missed that.
Yeah, check it out in the preferences general. And we're going to move on to our iPhone picks. But before we do that, we have a new sponsor, Audible. I love Audible. They have over 50,000 titles. They probably have way more than that because that count is a little old. But they're all professionally read. You've probably heard about Audible.com. They, great audiobooks that you can get on iTunes, your iPod, and of course on your iPhone. I've been reading through. Well, before I talk about what I'm going to pick for my Audible pick. You can get a free Audible book if you're not already a member. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/iPhone and get a free trial to Audible Listener Gold, which gives you one free credit. You do have to use your credit card, but if you don't want to continue the service, you are free to say no, and you get to keep your book. So that's cool. And my pick... I highly recommend this pick. I blasted through this book. I couldn't stop listening to it. It's The Accidental Billionaires, The Founding of Facebook by Ben Mezrich. It's just like it sounds. It's the story of how Facebook was founded, and it's incredibly interesting to hear. And of course, there's an air raid siren going off in the background.
It's because you're living in 1941 in London, aren't you?
That's exactly correct. Yeah,
it could be a tornado, though, right? Do you need to go somewhere?
No, it happens every day at 9 o'clock. But so, you know, if it was a tornado at 9 o'clock, then we wouldn't know. But yeah, so The Accidental Billionaires, it's just, it's very inspiring to hear how, you know, Facebook was founded in, you know, in a dorm room at Harvard by these college kids, and how it just exploded. And, you know, to be honest, I'm very bad at Facebook. I don't, you know, Twitter is what I do. I'm very good at that because it's 140 characters and that's all. And with, you know, lists coming out, I'm getting a little confused because I don't have enough attention span for that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's great to, you know, it's really making me want to, you know, look at Facebook because of the way that it was founded and, you know, their initial goals for, you know, creating, you know, a Facebook for, you know, for the people you actually met in real life, as opposed to what MySpace was doing, which was kind of, you know, this is what I'm doing kind of set up, as opposed to, you know, these are the people I know and want to interact with, you know, kind of, it, you know, you guys know about Facebook, but, you know, it's definitely worth checking out this book. If you do or you don't enjoy Facebook, it's one of those great success stories of, you know, of the web in the last few years. And are they making a movie about Facebook? I've heard random rumors about that.
There's rumors, but let's not go there.
Okay. This is a fantastic book, The Accidental Billionaires, and you can get it for free by going to audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. And, you know, that supports us by supporting Audible. So check that out. And with that, let's move on to our our iPhone picks. And let's let Jeff go first, because I always let Adam go first.
Ooh, I get to go first. All right, so the app I have today, it's actually a whole collection of apps. Excuse me. But the one that I've been looking at is Lingolook Italy. And Lingolook, they make language phrase apps. And I'm looking at the one for Italy because I need to pick up a few phrases in Italian. And so I'm looking for iPhone applications that will help me learn a little bit of Italian. And so I started playing with this one actually today, and I'm really liking it. It has a ton of different phrases. It has lists of words. It has pronunciations included. And if you get just like completely lost and cannot figure out how to say a word and you need someone to hear that word, you can just play it on your iPhone for the person to hear. And it doesn't require an internet connection to work.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that was a big thing for me, because I'm assuming that even with a roaming data plan, international roaming data plan, I would prefer to save that data for more important things, like if I need to be doing email and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Those costs for international roaming plans are insane.
Yeah. So Lingolook, and the one I've been playing with today is Lingolook Italy. And it even had phrases already included that to me are really important. So I can tell people about food allergies in a restaurant. So I can make sure that I don't end up with dairy in my food.
Yeah. So you're going to Italy.
Yeah. I'm going to go for a couple weeks in December.
Very cool. Yeah. And you're able to do that because they moved Macworld, right?
Yeah, actually. So it'll be fun, but I'll get back from Italy and have like, I think, a week and a half, and then it's off to CES.
Oh, you're covering CES this year?
I'm going to go to CES. Yeah.
Cool. Maybe I should do that.
But yeah, they're going to have some iPhone and iPod stuff there.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
So Lingolook Italy, $4.99. Are all of the Lingolook apps $4.99?
I think all of them are $4.99.
Cool. All right.
And they have several different countries.
Yes. Okay, Adam, what do you have for us?
Awesome. Well, I have a freebie, something that I ran across, and I don't have cable, basically. I have like basic cable, so I get the networks, and that's about it. But I ran across the Food Network Nighttime app. Have you guys seen this?
No.
Do you guys watch Food Network at all?
Occasionally. Ever?
Okay, so they got a bunch of great shows that I really like. Well, there's one called Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives that has all these great restaurants and stuff. And let's see, Asa Cakes and Chopped. And so there's a bunch of great shows that are on Food Network Nighttime. This app lets you stream them, full episodes.
Over Wi-Fi only.
You know what? You really suck. I can't believe you just told me about this application.
Food porn on your iPhone.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's great. It works over Wi-Fi and 3G, I believe. I'm pretty sure 3G. I think I tried it on 3G. The only thing I seem to remember about that was that the video quality severely degrades on 3G.
Yeah.
Like, it's not great. Don't quote me on that. I want to say I tested it out. I've only had it for, I found it last week, so I played around with it a little bit.
Oh, boy.
It's free. It also has schedule and a bunch of other stuff. About the only other thing, I guess I thought it might have that it didn't have would be like recipes, but a lot of the shows that are on there aren't really recipe shows. So that's probably why, but
yeah,
it'd be kind of cool if there was some actual recipes on there. Might be another feature to add in the future, but does all the schedule, the streaming shows, has clips if you want to just see a short segment. So offers both. I'm not sure how long, you know, the full clips seem to be like the most recent episodes from the past week or so. So I'm sure they time out kind of like Hulu or some of the other web-based streaming services, but it just lets me grab that content and view it when I want to. And it's a great app. It works really well. And it was a cool little find.
It's on my phone
right now. And I just downloaded it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I know we're close to the end of the show, but I do have to bail out, guys. So I'm going to say my goodbyes and let Michael email me his pick. So I can check it out, but
yeah. Okay. So you can find Adam Christensen at the Mattcast at mattcast.com and twitter.com/Mattcast. Thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
I'll miss you while you're gone.
See ya.
See ya.
And his pick was Food Network Nighttime, and it's free. So my pick is actually kind of a repick of, you know, one of Merlin's picks, but he picked, you know, so many apps that we probably don't even remember. But
wait, Merlin was on?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, you can go back and check that out. Actually, you know, it's worth a re-listen. I've listened to it several times because he's got a lot to say. But my pick is Simple Note. Because after our discussion about, you know, syncing notes, it really made me think, boy, I'm not getting a whole lot of use out of my notes app. It can just be so much more useful to me if I can bring that information up on my computer whenever I need to, check it out, make changes to it, see changes, you know, have that all in sync. So Simple Note, it's $1.99. And this is the first time I've actually replaced a default app on my home screen with, you know, the number one home screen, with a third party app. So I've replaced my notes app. I've moved all my notes from the notes app to Simple Note. And, I just love it. It's so great because it's very simple. Like its name implies, it does the same kind of stuff as the notes app does, but it allows you to sync. It does it automatically. There's no button to press to sync it. You sign up for a free account, and then every time you make a change to any of your notes, it syncs to the server. And whenever you need to go check those out on your computer, you go to simple-note. Well, is it simplenote.com? I think it's Simple Note. Simple Note. Yeah, simplenoteapp.com. And you log in there, and there's all your stuff, and you can search through the notes, and you can make new notes online, and they'll sync to your phone, and it's just happy goodness. It's wonderful.
You know what would make that even cooler is if there was a desktop app so that it would sync between the web and your desktop and your iPhone.
Well, Polar Bear Farms notes app will do that, except without the web part.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I like the idea of having the web part so that if you're out and about and like your iPhone battery's dead, but you have access to a computer, or for whatever reason you don't want to do it on your iPhone,
right,
and you're not at your desktop computer, you could still have that access. You know, why not have it all places?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like having the web interface is perfect for me.
Yeah, it's cool.
And it reduces the potential for it to freak out and mess up the sync part.
Yeah. Okay. Can you set up an RSS feed off of your web notes?
I don't think so. No, you can't.
Okay. I'm asking because that's what I do with Instapaper, because I tag articles that I want to go back and read
and
when I'm on my iPhone. They go to Instapaper, and I set up an RSS feed off of that. So when I'm sitting at my computer, I can just open up NetNewsWire, and then all of that stuff is there, so I don't have to go to the website.
Oh.
Yeah, how clever is that?
So making a little newspaper for yourself.
I am, and it's really slick. So that'd be really cool if you could do RSS, because then I could have all my notes automatically going wherever I want. And all right, I think I need to call these people.
Yeah, so if the pick is SimpleNote $199, but if you're looking for an app that a notes app that replaces, you know, notes that syncs to the desktop instead, Notepad by Polar Bear Farm is where you want to go for that. But I really like SimpleNote just because it syncs, you know, magically, and I don't have to worry about being near my computer, and it's all happy for me. So $199, and I think Gruber uses it. At least he did at some point. So
it looks like a very cool little app.
Yeah, it's not pretty. You know, it's not as pretty as Polar Bear Farm's app, which, you know, I wish I liked that better. But anyway, that's my pick, $199 in the App Store, SimpleNote. And with that, I would like to say that in our podcast marketplace this month, we have one of those now, thanks to the awesome dudes at Backbeat Media. You can check out Photo Timer from Mac About Town on the iTunes App Store. And we've also got Audible, a free Audible book, at audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. And you can go to iPhoneAlley.com for more news, tips, and reviews. Share a tip. Tell us about a product or an app that you found that's cool. Hit the contact link for that. And you can find our iPhone picks as well as the show notes for the podcast at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. You can give us feedback by sending an email to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer every day during the week, iPod Observer, and twitter.com/jgamet is his other spot that you can find him on the Twitter.
That's right.
Did you know that Facebook?
I get around.
Did you know that I say, you know, I give an unnecessary the to Facebook, but it was actually called the Facebook.
Really? I always assumed it was just Facebook.
No, it was, who was the guy who founded Napster? I can't remember.
I can never remember his name.
Sean Parker, right?
See, could be. I always think of the remake of that big heist movie where they have the Mini Coopers driving around.
Oh yeah,
and their computer guy wants to be called Napster because he invented Napster but fell asleep, and then the guy that everyone knows that created Napster stole it from him.
I remember that. Yeah, I think his name is Sean Parker, but Sean Parker is the one who shortened it to just Facebook. So if you go to thefacebook.com, it'll forward you. So that's something I learned from that book. So yeah, twitter.com/jgamet, the iPhone Alley's Twitter, and there's no the, I just added that, is twitter.com/iPhone Alley. And with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
An iPod, an iPod, a phone,
and an internet. You know, if you need to have a prop that does anything.
Uh-huh.
In Star Trek, it's always the tricorder.
Right.
Well, in Doctor Who, it's a sonic screwdriver. So it's a tool, but it's also a scanner, and he can do all kinds of things with it. So, of course, I needed to have a prop for my costume, and I bought a sonic screwdriver from ThinkGeek.
That's cool.
And it lights up, and it makes sound. So
that's super cool. My prop for Halloween was this really neat Altec Lansing battery powered speaker dock thingy.
Mm-hmm.
The InMotion Max.
Oh, okay.
Have you checked that out?
I haven't, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I grabbed that and I just played DANCE on that, and I just, you know, had it on my shoulder, and we walked in like total dorks. And that was my prop.
Bet you had your tight pants and your fake tattoos.
You looked so awesome.
Oh, no doubt.
You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers.
The footwear I have is not something that someone that's fashion oriented will wear.
Well,
ever.
It proves that you own a gun and that you used to be a cop.
Well, there is that too. Yeah.
Communicator.